Now, I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but it's happened to me a couple of times when I've been on holidays. Maybe it was in Queensland, maybe it was in Melbourne, I can't remember now. But I'm walking down the street and someone comes up to me and says, "Can you tell me where this is?" You ever had that type of thing? Someone comes up and asks you for directions, and I love to be able to say to them, "I'm from Tasmania." And I've actually found to be able to say to people that I'm from Tasmania answers a whole range of actual issues that could potentially come up. But so I say, "I'm from Tasmania, I'm not from around here." But you know, when they just look at me, they're not sort of really sure. And so they come and ask me this question. And maybe you've had that as well. Now really, the types of questions we ask people, it really depends on who we think they are. It's interesting, isn't it? The types of questions we ask people depends on who we think they are. So if you're low on money, you might go and ask your parents and say, "Mum or Dad, can you give us some money? No, I'm going out." But you're probably not going to come and ask me. I don't recommend coming to ask me if you just want to go out. Come and ask me for money. I've got 5 kids already. They're already asking me for money. You ask your own parents. But it, maybe if you're if you've got a problem with your assignment that you can't do, you're not going to come and ask me, are you? Right? You've got some mathematical question about Laplace transforms or something or other, and you're not going to come and ask me because I've forgotten all that stuff years ago. It might be that if you've been involved in some type of crime, then the person you're going to ask there is the person who you think can help you, like the police or a judge. And of course, if there's something wrong with you, if you've got a real pain, you've got some lump on your body and you're worried about it, again, you're not going to come and ask me and say, "What do you think about this?" You're going to go and ask a doctor or someone, aren't you? You're going to find a specialist. And so the types of questions that we ask really reflect what we think about a person, how we understand a person. See, I wonder what type of questions people would ask God. What are the questions? If someone could ask God a question, could ask something from God, I wonder what you'd ask him. Because I think the type of question you'd ask God would sort of reflect what you think about God. The types of question you would ask of God would reflect about what you think of yourself before God and what you need from God. And so the questions we ask are actually quite a good window into how we think and what we think about other people and what we think about ourselves. John chapter 6 is a chapter about asking the right question of the right person and knowing what that right question even is. And so as we come to this chapter, we're actually going to find out who Jesus really is and what question you need to be asking of him. What question you actually need to be asking in terms of, "I want this." What request you need to be making from him. So we're going to start off with our first reading now. Ben's going to come out, and it's John chapter 6, verses 1 to 15. Sometime after this, Jesus crossed to the far shore of the Sea of Galilee, that is, the Sea of Tiberias. And a great crowd of people followed him because they saw the miraculous signs he had performed on the sick. Then Jesus went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. The Jewish Passover feast was near. When Jesus looked up and saw a great crowd coming towards him, he said to Philip, "Where shall we buy bread for these people to eat?" He asked this only to test him, for he already had in mind what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 8 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each one to have a bite." Another of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up, "Here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But how far will they go among so many?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was plenty of grass in that place, and the men sat down, about 5,000 of them. Jesus then took the loaves, gave thanks, and distributed to those who were seated as much as they wanted. He did the same with the fish. When they had all had enough to eat, he said to his disciples, "Gather the pieces that are left over, let nothing be wasted." So they gathered them and filled 12 baskets with the pieces of 5 barley loaves left over and by those who had eaten. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who was to come into the world." Jesus, knowing that they intended to come and make him king by force, withdrew again to a mountain by himself. Now, I've got a map there on your notes so you can see where all this is happening. Now, the Sea of Galilee, that's that lake or that sea up to the north of the map. Hopefully you can read the writing there. And Capernaum is one of the towns which is around the outside of it. And they're going across the lake. So they're going from one side to the other. Exactly whereabouts they cross, we're not sure, but it's around that region. We're also told that it's near the Passover. And it's interesting when you're reading through John's Gospel, you're often told it's near the Passover, or it was the Sabbath, or it was a feast of the Jews, or it was the festival of booths or of tents. And so the Gospel of John has these time markers in here for you. And the markers are there to actually let you know what the time is, and it helps to put it in context for you. And so in this case, we're told it's the Passover, the Passover is coming up, and so that's when they remember Moses. That's when they remember how Moses led them out of Egypt, and God delivered them through Moses out of their slavery into Egypt to be his people and to take them into the promised land, and all the events that go with that. It's that type of event. It's that type of time of year. Now, the crowd's following Jesus because they've seen the signs that he did. We saw in chapter 5 last week that these signs are there to testify to Jesus, and so these people have seen those, and they're following him. Now, Jesus sees the crowd, and he asks Philip a question. He says, "Where are we going to get food for these people?" Now, there's 5,000 men, and I assume, plus their women and children. This is a big crowd of people. It's a good question, and he's really doing it to test Philip, as we see here, because he wants to see what type of question Philip's going to ask. How's Philip going to answer this? Well, what's he going to say? Well, we need to do this, or we need to get that, or can we get this? Or it's going to show something about Philip on how he answers this question. Philip says, "I don't know. I've got no idea how we can do this." And then Jesus gets a small amount of bread, a small amount of fish that someone else brings over. He gives thanks to God and he feeds 5,000 men with it. Now, that's a lot of food, isn't it? I don't know if you've ever been involved in catering, but to feed this number of people, that's a lot of food. From this small amount. And you can tell that they're all, it's not just that they all got a tiny bit. You know how sometimes with my kids, if you've got like a chocolate bar and they all want a bit, you've got to get the knife and cut it up exactly the right proportions. And so none of them actually get a full chocolate bar. They all just get an increasingly small piece as it goes along. It's not like that, because there's actually basket loads left over. And I think we're told about the basket loads left over to make the point that everyone had their fill. Everyone, it's not that they all just got a tiny amount of the fish, you know, like a little speck. It's like they all ate their fill and there was actually food in abundance. See, Jesus was able to provide in a way that Philip just didn't believe. He was able to provide in a way that was just beyond what they were expecting. Now, we actually need to remember this. We need to remember this when we bring our prayer request to God. That God can provide in ways beyond what you may be expecting. Right? We might think, well, this is the situation, this has happened, therefore only that could happen, but under God something else might happen. And we just mustn't think, well, this is how it's going to be. We need to be prepared to see that God may well provide in ways that we don't expect. We certainly see that happening here with Philip. Remember that in your prayers. Remember that when you're in trouble. Remember that when you're making requests about God. Now, Jesus provides this bread for them. And I want to talk a little bit about bread. He provides bread. And if we think about bread, you might actually think bread's a bit boring. Have bread. You know, when you go out, do you go out and have bread? You go out and have a curry, don't you? You go out and have a curry. Like, why does he provide boring bread? It's bread. You know, like, well, why didn't he provide some expensive clothes for them, or some jewellery, or, you know, there's other things, some boats, they're down near the water, he could provide a whole lot of, whole fleet of boats. He provides bread. I think it's because bread is really, really basic. Bread in many ways is life. If you don't eat, you don't live. And in one simple sense, that this bread is life. It's the thing that they actually need. They need it more than those other things. And for these people, they've heard of this type of bread. Back in Exodus chapter 16, verse 4, and they would have been hearing these stories around the Passover, they would have been hearing how God, when he brought the Israelites out of Egypt under Moses, that when they came out into the desert, God provided the manna for them. And the manna was this bread that rained down from heaven. And each morning they would go out and there would be this, it says it was like coriander seed or a type of wafer. And there was this special bread that God provided. And so this group of people, they know about bread, particularly at this time of year. And here is this miracle of the bread. The miracle of the basics of life being provided for them. And so you can see how they respond here. They go, this is the prophet. Where is it? Verse 14. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, surely this is the prophet who was to come into the world. Now there's this prophecy in Deuteronomy 18, verse 18, about a prophet like Moses coming. And so here is Jesus out in the wilderness with the people of God. And he's providing bread for them. I mean, this is like Moses. And so the people see this and they go, surely this is the prophet who was to come. You can see how they're identifying Jesus there. And they are wanting to make him king. Now, this actually looks good, doesn't it? Here it is. Jesus does this miracle. They identify him as a prophet. That's a great thing to be identifying him as. They want to make him king. King over them. That's a great thing. Yet we see that Jesus withdraws and goes up to a mountain. Withdraws from the crowd. So while identifying him as a prophet and as king is good, that there's something more. There's something more that needs to be shown here. And this is what we now find in the next reading. So, Ben, if you can come down, please. We're going to read verses 16 to 21. When evening came, his disciples went down to the lake, where they got into a boat and set off across the lake for Capernaum. By now it was dark, and Jesus had not yet joined them. A strong wind was blowing, and the waters grew rough. When they had rowed 3 or 3.5 miles, they saw Jesus approaching the boat, walking on the water, and they were terrified. But he said to them, "It is I, don't be afraid." Then they were willing to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat reached the shore where they were heading. Now what are we to make of that? In the previous miracle that Jesus did, we've at least got this idea of him being the prophet brought out at the end of it, so we can understand it a bit. But here we have Jesus comes out, walks on the water, there's this storm, they get in the boat, then the boat arrives where it's going. What are we meant to make of that type of miracle when we see it? Because it's not explained for us. These are the types of questions you need to be asking when you're reading the Bible. The way I answer those types of questions is that I try to look at what went before it and what comes after it. Try to get some context in which to understand it. Now, in this case, you've just had Jesus doing a Moses-type miracle before it. And as we'll see a bit later on, after this, they're going to be talking about Moses again and what Moses gave and the bread that Moses gave versus the bread that Jesus gives. And so I think that the context is that it's got something to do with Moses. It's trying to tell something more about Jesus and Moses. You see, Jesus wants to show them something else. Because why does it even happen? It didn't have to happen. Jesus could have come down, got in the boat and gone with them. So Jesus has deliberately chosen for this to happen. He's chosen for his disciples to go out on the boat, to get into a storm, and then for him to come to them. Now he's done that because he wants to show them something else. He's shown them the miracle of the bread and the feeding of the 5,000. But he needs to show them something else if they're to understand him. And so he brings them to this place of being in the middle of the lake with a storm. Now, we show ourselves to people in different ways, don't we? When you're coming to university, you dress in certain ways in order to show yourself to people, to say something about yourself. We see a policeman wearing his uniform. When we see his uniform, that says something about him. We see a bride on her wedding day wearing her wedding dress, and that says something about her. Now, Jesus is using these miracles that he's doing to dress himself to those around him. They're the clothes that he's putting on so that people can see who he is and ultimately what types of things they should be asking from him. So here he is coming to his disciples in a storm. They're out on this boat. Again, Jesus has orchestrated this. He's brought them to this point. They're now in a storm and Jesus is coming towards them. Now, who is the one who comes in the storm in the Bible? There are many occasions in the Bible where God comes in a storm. On Mount Sinai, in the book of Psalms, God's the one who comes in the storm. And I think that Jesus is making himself known to them, saying, I'm greater than Moses. I'm the one who's coming to you like this. I think there's another comparison with Moses as well, in that Moses did a great lake sea crossing miracle as well. Jesus is doing a sea crossing miracle here. Moses did one as well. And again, that's sort of another link to Moses. But with Moses, the waters parted and he went down. With Jesus, he goes above. And it may well be that that's another contrast we're meant to be seeing here. That Jesus is greater than Moses and that he's above while Moses is from below. That type of idea. You see, Moses is not just a prophet. Sorry, Jesus is not just a prophet like Moses. He's greater than Moses, and I think that that's what this miracle is showing us. We've had the bread showing us that Jesus is this potentially like Moses, but then the next miracle straight after it says to us, no, he's more than Moses. He's more than Moses. Well, let's see what happens now. So we'll go to verse 22 to 29. The next day, the crowd that had stayed on the opposite shore of the lake realized that only one boat had been there and that Jesus had not entered it with his disciples, but that they had gone away alone. Then some boats from Tiberias landed near the place where the people had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. Once the crowd realized that neither Jesus nor his disciples were there, they got into the boats and went to Capernaum in search of Jesus. When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, Rabbi, when did you get here? Jesus answered, I tell you the truth. You are looking for me not because you saw miraculous signs, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. Do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. On him God the Father has placed his seal of approval. Then they asked him, What must we do the works God requires? Jesus answered, The work of God is this, to believe in the one he has sent. So here we see the people the next day. They see that the boats have gone, and the disciples went in that boat, but that because they've been wanting to make Jesus king, they've been keeping their eye out for him. And okay, if the guy wants to go up there for a while, they'll let him do that. But now he's gone. He's not up there and he didn't go in the boat. So they get in the boats and then they head across to Capernaum and they find him over there. And you can see their confusion in verse 25. When they found him on the other side of the lake, they asked him, Rabbi, when did you get here? Like, how did you get across here? You couldn't have walked all the way around. You didn't go in the boat. How did you do it? Now, Jesus doesn't answer their question. He deals with this, with what they're actually asking of him and the problems that they're asking of him. He says in verse 26, I tell you the truth, you are looking for me not because you saw miraculous signs, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill. And so he's saying to them, you're only interested in bread. You're only interested in bread. It seems that they've seen this sign, but they haven't seen beyond it. And they're not asking for Jesus, they're not asking of Jesus anything more than just bread. That's what they want from him. They want this bread. They want the types of things. And so that's why, see, this is what you'd ask of a prophet like Moses, isn't it? Give us bread from heaven. That's what they asked of Moses in the Old Testament. Give us bread. And so that's what they're asking of Jesus. They're asking him that type of thing. Now, is that what you should be asking for, from Jesus, just for bread? Or if he was, if they're going to ask from him questions as a king, they're going to be saying, well, you're the king. Fight our battles. Bring us justice. But is that the type of thing they should be asking of Jesus? Is this the type of thing you should be asking from him? See, these people have seen the sign, but they haven't really understood who Jesus is and what they could be asking of him. And so Jesus is saying, you're just after bread. You're just after bread. Look at verse 27. He says, do not work for food that spoils, but for food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give you. On him God the Father has placed his seal of approval. You see, they're asking for bread, but what's Jesus saying they should be asking for? What is it that they should be seeking? They should be seeking eternal life. See, this is the question you need to be asking of Jesus. Give me life. That's who he is. He's the type of person to say, give me life. When you say to him, give me bread, like they're asking, well, you're just seeing him like a prophet like Moses. If you're saying, just give me justice, you're seeing him just like a king. But when you say, give me life, you're seeing him as the one who comes in the storm. You're seeing him as the one who is above the waters. You're seeing him as God, as the giver of life. And this is what Jesus says we should seek. That we should seek eternal life. Now, in many countries around the world, eternal life and living for God with forever, being part of paradise, being part of heaven, is actually something that people seek and they're concerned about it. But in Australia, in our culture, we don't care about it. And so when Jesus tells us to seek eternal life, in our culture, that's met with apathy. Eternal life. Why do I want eternal life? That's where most Australians are. They just don't even worry about it. Now, that's the world that you're living in. You're living in a world where you want the things of God, where you want eternal life, where for you the things of God matter. But for most people in our society, the here and now is all that matters. What's in the future? I don't even think about it. I don't even give it brain space. I don't give it any time at all. Now, why is it that Australia's like that? Why is it that Australians just don't even think about it, don't even give God time? I'm not sure exactly how we've come to that position, but I know what it means to be in that position. And it's because you think that God's not worth it. You don't think that giving God the thought, the honour, the whatever, you just don't think that God's worth it. And that's where a lot of Australians are. They just don't see God as being worthy of their time, their effort, their thought, their devotion. They've got other things that they want to be, you know, spending their time with. They certainly don't fear God and his judgment, the judgment that comes on the last day with the resurrection of the dead. They don't worry about that. You know, when I die at my funeral, we'll play the song, I did it my way, or something like that. You know, we're just living for the here and now. And that's where Australians are at. But Jesus is saying, no, no, you're wrong if you think that way. If you think that just the here and now is all that matters, Jesus says you are wrong. And that what matters is eternal life. And that is what you need to be asking for. That's what you need to be asking for. And that's what now brings us to our final reading where Jesus is going to tell us where we get this life from. Let's have a look, verse 30 to 40. So they asked him, what miraculous sign will you give us so that we may see it and believe you? What will you do? Our forefathers ate the manna in the desert, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat. Jesus said to them, I tell you the truth, it is not Moses who has given you the bread from heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. Sir, they said, from now on give us this bread. Then Jesus declared, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. But as I told you, you have seen me, and still you do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never drive away. For I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I shall lose none of all that he has given me, but raise them up at the last day. For my Father's will is that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day. So here we have Jesus saying that he is the bread of life. He said to them, if you want to have eternal life, you've got to believe in me. And that the work of God is to believe in the one that he has sent, that is in me. You've got to believe in me. And they say, give us a sign. Now, he's just given them a sign. And it's interesting, isn't it? They ask for a sign. They say, our fathers received manna from heaven. And Jesus has actually just given them bread. So he's actually just done a bread miracle. And now they're asking for another one. Which shows you they just did want bread. That's what they're asking for. Just give us some more bread. And Jesus takes what they say here about the manna that came from heaven, about how God through Moses gave them this manna, this special bread, and he uses it to make a contrast between himself and the bread that Moses gave. And so he talks about himself as being bread and about the bread that Moses gave. And he says that the manna, that the bread that Moses gave, when you ate that, you died. But if you eat the bread that I give, you will live. You will live forever. And so Jesus is different to what Moses gave. Jesus says that I have come down from God. I've come down from above. It's not just that Jesus gives bread, like Moses gave bread, but Jesus actually is the bread. He is the bread. See, because prophets can point to life in different ways, can't they? Prophets can tell us about God's messages and say, this is the way you should live, this is what God's done, go to God and receive life. But that's not what Jesus is doing. Jesus is not saying, now, I will show you the right way. He's actually saying, I am the bread. I am that basic sustenance. I am the life. And we see what this life means. Look in verse 35. I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. See, this is the life that Jesus brings. It's not like the bread of the miracle that he gave, where those people will hunger later. But when you come to Jesus, he will give you life that will go on forever. He will give you a life and a satisfaction in God so that you won't be thirsty, so that you won't be hungry. That's the life that Jesus gives. It's an eternal life. It's the life that you want to have on the last day. Because, look in verse 40, for it's my Father's will that everyone who looks to the Son and believes in him shall have eternal life, and I shall raise him up on the last day. Now, the last day is the day of judgment, and that is the day when you need life. Because you can be raised up unto judgment and death, or you can be raised up in eternal life with God, to have that eternal life of God's kingdom, that eternal life of being God's person. And Jesus is saying that that's the life he gives. And that's the life we need to be asking for. The life that's going to mean forgiveness and salvation on the day of judgment. The day when we want to have that life before God, when we want to be saved. See, this is actually the question that we need to be asking of Jesus. So, if you actually could ask God for anything, what would it be? If you could ask God for anything, what would you ask for? I think for many people in our world, they'd say, well, I'd ask for a house. Or I'd ask for peace in my family. My family's got terrible troubles there. Or I'd ask for healing for my body because I'm falling apart and it's frustrating. or I'd ask for lots of money so that I could go and do the things I want to do. I'd ask for, you know, to be able to travel around the world. There's all types of things that we could ask for, isn't there? But Jesus is saying here that the thing we need to ask for is life. And I think the reason why most people wouldn't ask that from God is that they don't realize that they need life. They don't realize that God is angry at their sins. They don't realize that on the day of judgment, on the last day when they're raised up, it's not going to be to share in God's glory and in forgiveness and in love. It's going to be to share in judgment and God's anger. And the thing that you need is life. That is what you need, more than any of these other things. That's what you need to be asking God for. Now, Jesus is the bread of life. And if you come to him and ask, you will get life. You'll get life so that you will not thirst. You'll get life so that you will not be hungry. You'll get life so that on the last day, you'll stand in confidence before God and call him Father and know that you are part of his kingdom.